Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The WEEI Sports Radio Network. You are locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, Brian Barrett with you until 4 o'clock. The phone number is 617-779-7937. So, an AFC evaluator this week, via The Athletic, an article in The Athletic this week, suggested that the Patriots may be tanking. Quote, I'm a little wary that they're tanking for Trevor Lawrence. So, the question I have at 617-779-7937, would you be okay with the Patriots tanking? And secondarily, do you think they're actually planning that way? Do you believe that Bill Belichick's actually going to tank in the 2020 season? So he goes on to say, does this AFC evaluator, I'm a little worried that they're tanking for Trevor Lawrence. I think they stay true to what they got. They're not going to panic. Before, you would hear rumors about Cam possibly going there, and you say, nah, that's not a Bill Belichick type guy. But the way the draft shook out, that might be spot on. He ends up going on a very favorable deal for the club. I think they're high on Stidham, and we'll see. All right, so a couple of things here about this quote from an anonymous AFC evaluator via The Athletic. So this whole take, it doesn't really make sense to me. He says he's a little worried that they're tanking for Trevor Lawrence because they may not go after Cam Newton and because that the Patriots essentially didn't draft a guy. Yet he says at the same time that they're high on Stidham. So because they haven't shown interest in Cam Newton and they didn't draft a quarterback, that means they're tanking. Yet, they must be high on Stidham, this guy says. This is what's confusing to me. He says the Patriots, he's fearful that they're tanking for Trevor Lawrence, but they must be really high on Stidham.
I think he means that he thinks it's a win-win. So if Stidham is bad, then they'll get Trevor Lawrence. But if Stidham is good the way they think he is, then it's still a win.
So his idea is, all right, well, if Stidham stinks, no big deal. Then they'll be one of the worst teams in the NFL and they can get Trevor Lawrence. Now, that may make more sense, Bridget, but the way that this is worded, it just doesn't really make sense to me. But overall, when I look at it from the Patriots perspective and the Bill Belichick perspective, do we actually see this as a logical thing? Would Bill Belichick be the guy that actually decides, well, you know what, I'm going to tank the season? So this is one reason I believe this is absolutely ridiculous, that Bill Belichick would actually tank. So if you remember this, the Patriots drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in 2014. And here is what Bill Belichick said after that. I think organizationally, in our organization, I don't think we would put together a team the way Indianapolis did when they lost Manning and they go 0-16, 1-15, or whatever it was. I don't think that's really what we're looking for. Unfortunately, when we lost Tom in 08, we had a player that could step in and we won 11 games. Of course, he's referring to Matt Cassel. We want to be competitive, even if something happens to a player at any position. I think depth is always important. You never know when you're going to need it. But I don't think we'd be happy going 1-15 if we had an injury at one position. But other people have different philosophies. I'm just saying that to the contract, to that example, I don't think that's really what we're trying to do. Okay. So another reason I don't believe the Patriots, or a reason I should say, I don't believe the Patriots are going to tank is because of what Bill Belichick said in 2014. He basically took a direct shot at the Colts and said, that's not how we're built. If we lose a player, we're going to do what we did the year we had Matt Cassel. We're going to try to go 11-5. Even though they didn't make the playoffs, we're going to try to get into the postseason. That's what Bill Belichick said. He thought it was disgraceful what was going on in Indianapolis. He said, we're not built that way. Okay, so that's one thing. Bill Belichick, if he actually tanked, he'd look like a complete hypocrite based on what he said in 2014. Another thing I would say is this. His team is too good to tank. Now, the Dolphins got rid of their left tackle last year. This is a team that everybody perceived to be tanking at the beginning of last season. Remember? Tank for Tua. That was the motto that was being thrown around at that particular point in time because everybody believed that Tua Tagovailoa was going to be the number one pick in the draft. Of course, he ends up going fifth. And ironically, he still goes to the Dolphins. But everybody thought that was the Dolphins' motto, tanking for Tua, right? So if you look at that team last year, they got rid of their left tackle, Laremy Tunsil, for two first-round picks. And I'm not arguing with the way the Dolphins were building the team. But they got rid of their left tackle. Obviously, that hurt them last year. They got rid of their star safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick, who turned out to be a Pro Bowler with the Pittsburgh Steelers, not to mention the fact that he was at least in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. So you got rid of a really good guy in your secondary, and you got rid of your left tackle. And Brian Flores eventually won over that locker room, and they won five games. Okay, and by the way, remember, they came into Foxborough in Week 17 with nothing to play for, and they beat the New England Patriots. And if you look at this Patriots team, on paper, they're better than what the Miami Dolphins were a season ago. And even the Dolphins stumbled into five wins, right? So when I look at the Patriots, you still have the Defensive Player of the Year in Stephon Gilmore that's going to be in your secondary. You still have Devin McCourty that you brought back for two additional years that played at a very high level last year. Remember, at the beginning of last season, he was getting some Defensive Player of the Year buzz based on the amount of interceptions that he was getting. You still have a 34-year-old, and although he's 34, you still have Julian Edelman, who is one of, if not the best slot receivers in the NFL. You still have James White, that's very good catching the ball out of the backfield. So when you just look at this Patriots team on paper, you have a lot of guys that were part of Super Bowl teams here. They are not bad enough as currently constructed to actually tank. They're not bad enough to do that, okay? So then I would point to this. You look at, like, say, the Bengals, for example. They had no A.J. Green. Their defense was horrendous. Their offensive line was horrendous. So you had nothing in Cincinnati. That's how you get the first pick in the draft. You're just the worst roster in the NFL. The Patriots aren't there yet. I'm not saying they have a roster like the 49ers, but they're not like the Bengals were last year. So then what is Bill Belichick going to do? Is he really going to take, what's he going to do, bench his stars? Is he going to say, you know what, we're not going to play Gilmore this game. We're going to give Gilmore the day off. Like, that's not just going to happen with the Patriots. So you're going to say, you know what, we're playing the Bills this week. The best receiver they have after the offseason, after that trade where they gave up a first-round pick is Stephon Diggs. Is Bill Belichick going to say, you know what, actually, Stephon Gilmore, you're not going to be on Diggs. We're not going to use him on him. Like, is he purposely going to make bad game plans to lose games? I just don't see that being in Bill Belichick's DNA. And something I alluded to earlier with the quarterback position, he's been good with all the quarterbacks here. You look at, for example, Matt Castle, 11-5. You look at Jimmy Garoppolo, won his first two games, and then Jacoby Brissett comes in, who they drafted in the third round that previous offseason just because Bill Parcells recommended him. He goes 1-1. Okay, he had no NFL experience whatsoever. At least Jimmy Garoppolo had a bunch of training camps and preseasons, etc. And if you look at Jacoby Brissett, he had nothing. He comes out of that game on a Thursday night against the Texans, runs the ball eight times. So Bill Belichick has had success with any quarterback he's had in terms of quarterbacks that have filled in for Brady. They've all been relatively successful here with the Patriots. So I would imagine that Belichick believes that he's going to get enough out of this quarterback position. And then I would also look at this. When you look at the draft next year, you're going to be able to get a quarterback. Now, maybe you can't get Trevor Lawrence. Now, obviously, what everybody wants to happen is Jarrett Stidham turns out to be a stud, and it's like, I can't believe this guy fell to the fourth round. But let's go with the hypothetical that Jarrett Stidham just isn't good. He's not a good player. Now, I believe that Jarrett Stidham's going to perform at a high level, but I don't believe he's going to be this complete bust at the quarterback position. I can't even label him a bust because you took him in the fourth round. But anyway, say hypothetically he is a guy that doesn't perform at all. Okay, it's not as if you're not going to have the opportunity to draft a quarterback in the first round next year. So you're not going to be the worst team in the league. You're not going to be the Jaguars. And there's teams that have young quarterbacks going to be worse than you, like the Washington Redskins. They don't have a great roster right now. I get they traded or drafted Chase Young, but that's not a great team right now. But nonetheless, when you look at it, even if the Patriots can't get that number one pick and get Trevor Lawrence, Matt Miller from Bleacher Report, who does a bunch of stuff in terms of covering the NFL draft, really good. He has four guys that are going to go in the first round for quarterbacks right now. Lawrence, of course, Justin Fields out of Ohio State, Jamie Newman, who's transferring from Wake Forest to Georgia, and Trey Lance, who plays for North Dakota State last year, had 28 touchdowns and no interceptions. And you could say, oh, it's North Dakota State. Well, Carson Wentz went there, and he was the number two pick. And before he went down in 2017, he was going to be the MVP of the NFL. So, I mean, you can come out of North Dakota State and play at a high level. So you could trade up for one of these other guys, the Justin Fields, the Jamie Newmans, the Trey Lances. So if Jarrett Stidham doesn't work out in 2020, you're going to have more options than just Trevor Lawrence. So just for all those reasons, the fact that Belichick has basically spoken out against tanking, saying that's not how we're built here, the fact that the roster is too good, the fact that you can still go into next year's draft, even if you don't have a top three pick, you can still get one of the quarterbacks in the draft, for all those reasons, and the fact that, think about all these years, Belichick's been talking about what they need to do to win. It doesn't matter where you're drafted. You can be an undrafted guy and start a bunch of games. It doesn't matter, right? Everything's about winning. I can't imagine Bill Belichick is just going to throw that out and not go into each and every week with the game plan that he thinks is best suited to win games. I just don't see Belichick doing that. The way you tank in the NFL is the way the Dolphins did when they're just trading away players. And look, it may be great for them in terms of building the franchise long term, getting all these first round picks, two for Tunsil. They already used one of them. First-round draft pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick as well that they used this year, right? They still have another one coming for Tunsil next year. So that's the way that you would tank in the NFL, is trading away a bunch of players on your current roster for future draft picks. I don't see the Patriots doing that. I really don't see them doing that, and it's not like they've started that process whatsoever yet. Now, if we go into the season and say, hypothetically, Jarrett Stidham is just so bad, you got to go to Hoyer and you're like 0-5 to begin the season, then I could see Belichick having a change of course. But I just don't see that being the case. So I don't see a way that the Patriots tank in the 2020 season. Brian Barrett with you until 4 o'clock. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Jason in Salem. What's up, Jason?
Hey, what's going on, man? So I've been dying to ask this question to somebody in calling sports radio, because with no sports, all we are talking about is Brady. You know, like, all of a sudden, Brady had a high, Bill Belichick, you know, flaws and all his flaws and everything. So let me ask you a question.
Oh, Jason, I never said that Brady had to hide all.
No, not you. This is what I'm hearing on the radio from fans and
oh, okay.
Like
so,
like,
Jason, you're addressing the people that are basically blaming Belichick for Brady leaving and Brady's numbers going down last year. Okay.
Yeah. So let me ask this question. So are we to believe that player development in the NFL really works and everything? Because all of the draft experts got Brady wrong. Why, we have to go back to that time, right? So if Brady was dripping in goatness when he came out of college.
Yeah.
And not only that, though, like, he stayed 20 years with the head coach. In 2018, when he wanted to trade Gronk, why didn't Brady do, like, Truth and KG and say, you know what, tell 49ers to trade me. If Bill Belichick is so bad, then trade me to the 49ers, keep Jimmy G, get draft picks. Like, he stayed 20 years. He didn't stay with a bad head coach all of a sudden.
Right. Yeah, Jason, the issue with Brady at the end is he wanted an extension. That's what he wanted, and Belichick wasn't going to give it to him. So that's why this whole crap about Asante Samuel talking about it wasn't fun anymore, that's not what it was. That's just basically you want to take a shot at Belichick saying he wasn't fun to play for. That's all Asante Samuel was doing.
It was time to move on. It was time. Like, he had Gronk just all of a sudden came out of retirement. It was in the works, I believe, for about 2 years when that contract came up.
Like, yeah,
it was time to move on. He stayed 20 years. He didn't stay with some horrible head coach all of a sudden.
Well, and that's the other issue, Jason. It's not as if, like, the Patriots are getting rid of Brady and they're going to be so sorry for doing it. Like, for example, I used Shaq when the Orlando Magic wouldn't give him the contract he wanted. He went to the Lakers. Shaq was in his prime. He was about to be the best player in the NBA in the post-Jordan era. You're losing Brady when he's 43.
But not only that, like, I just don't get how, like, all of a sudden Pats fans went from, you know, Belichick is the smartest head coach across from the other side, when, like, Super Bowl 53 with the Rams head coach basically, you know, loving this Bill Belichick to death.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Brady leaves. He can't coach. What if Stidham is, like, if we believe in player development, what if Stidham can work in the Patriots system? He was a fourth round pick.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Brady was a sixth.
Yeah, hey, no doubt about that, Jason. I appreciate the call. Obviously, Belichick feels really highly of the player, or he would have done something in free agency, or he would have done something in the draft. So clearly he felt where he was in the draft, he didn't feel like there was a significant upgrade that he could go after. He wasn't going to get Tua. He wasn't going to get Herbert. In this offseason, obviously, he didn't feel like Jameis Winston was an upgrade. He didn't feel like Andy Dalton was an upgrade. We'll see what happens with Cam Newton, but my concern with Newton would be the injury history, based on the fact the guy's coming off a Lisfranc injury on his foot, not to mention the fact he had surgery on his shoulder 2 years ago that ended the season. So that guy could just be damaged goods from a health perspective. With all those things being said, the fact that he's passing on all these quarterbacks, it's telling you that obviously Belichick is high on the player, and we're not going to know if he's right or wrong until we actually see Jarrett Stidham actually play games in the 2020 season. But another thing he points out that couldn't be more true is the fact that ever since Brady's left the team, it feels like everybody has just forgotten what Belichick achieved too. Okay, so the first Super Bowl, Brady wasn't Brady yet. And remember, in the AFC Championship game against the Pittsburgh Steelers that year, Brady got hurt in that game. Drew Bledsoe comes in against the Steelers. They still win the football game. In that game against the Rams, remember, Bill Belichick and his defense beat the greatest show on turf with two MVPs. Not one MVP, two MVPs. Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk. Now, Brady had the final drive that was a field goal by Adam Vinatieri, but that game was won because Belichick had a great defensive game plan and the defense performed at a high level. You go back to 03-04, look at what those Patriots defenses did to Peyton Manning, who was the best player in the sport. Look at what they did to Peyton Manning at that particular point in time, where Peyton Manning was horrible in two postseason games against Bill Belichick and his defense. Just 16 months ago, whatever it was, I'm trying to do the math real quickly in my head, but that Super Bowl against the Rams, they put up 3 points, did the Rams offense that put up north of 30 points per game during the regular season, was top 10 in NFL history in points scored in a season, and Sean McVay was considered to be the next genius head coach. What happened when he faced Bill Belichick's defense? They couldn't move the football whatsoever. So it's almost as if, because Brady has left, we're looking at this like, oh, Belichick wasn't part of this at all. Oh, Brady carried Belichick for all these years. It's just not the case. Everybody's creating this false narrative because Brady left town. Okay, because Brady's now a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's just ridiculous. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. Speaking of ridiculous, Charles Barkley had a crazy take this week. I want to get to that in just a little bit. We'll get you trending here in just a second here on WEI.
OMF. Weekdays from 2 to 6. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Join WEEI and Shaw's and Star Market this Tuesday for Feed New England, a day of giving to benefit the Greater Boston Food Bank. For more information, visit WEEI.com. Now, the Red Rifle will not be a Patriot. Andy Dalton is signing a one-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys. Adam Schefter reporting that Dalton will get $3 million in guaranteed money, and he can make up to $7 million. They still have not signed Dak Prescott, of course. They franchised him. He's not signed the tender. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Bears have declined the fifth-year option on quarterback Mitchell Trubisky's contract, meaning that 2020 could be Trubisky's last year with the team. Chicago, of course, picked up Nick Foles to compete with Trubisky. The Bears took Trubisky with the second overall pick back in 2017. That was ahead of Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. The NHL is considering moving up the draft. The league has sent a memo to teams advocating for a virtual draft on June 5th. It was originally scheduled for June 26th and June 27th in Montreal. In the memo, the NHL proposed it would use points percentages to determine the 15 non-playoff teams in the draft lottery. So essentially, it would be the percentage of available points the teams captured in games played before March 12th when the season was put on hold. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed.
Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, Brian Barrett with you until 4 o'clock. The number is 617-779-7937. We're coming to you this hour from the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI studio. All right, so with this documentary, the Bulls documentary coming out, The Last Dance, we've got a lot of former players getting into beefs, like Isaiah Thomas defending himself over the past couple of weeks. But you also have a lot of former players weighing in on the documentary. And apparently Charles Barkley is going to be featured heavily on the two episodes we're going to see tonight. But Barkley went on John Calipari's video cast, I guess you'd call it, Coffee with Cal, because it's a podcast and it's a video. So I guess you call it a video cast. But nonetheless, first of all, he did this top five list, his top five greatest players of all time. He had LeBron after Kobe. He had LeBron seventh all time in terms of the greatest players of all time, which is ridiculous. The fact that LeBron is behind Kobe on any list of all time great players is stupid. But anyway, so this is what he had to say about LeBron. You know, I love LeBron and everything about him, but I still think the way that they play the game today, he didn't want any part of those bad boy Pistons. Let me tell you something. Those guys were out there trying to hurt people. I used to tell people, when you were playing the Pistons, you could call home and tell your family you love them just in case you never saw them again.
Okay.
Talk about hyperbolic, right? You have older players that get mad at the younger generation for saying things, and Charles Barkley is going to say, before you played the Pistons, you're going to call your family just in case you never saw them again. Okay, first of all, you're not playing football, okay? Second of all, you're not playing hockey. And third, that is just a complete exaggeration, okay, that, oh, the Pistons really hurt us that bad, okay? So, and the other part of this is with LeBron. So you're telling me that LeBron couldn't have beat the bad boy Pistons and that LeBron would have no chance at beating the bad boy Pistons? He wouldn't want any part of that team whatsoever? So, hey, let me just tell you this. All right. So we found out in the last documentary that, oh, by the way, I don't know why Michael Jordan got all this credit for this, but, oh, well, he lost all these times to the Pistons, 3 out of 4. So you know what happened? And by the way, this isn't me defending LeBron. I just feel like I have to at least come to his defense slightly. I'm not the biggest LeBron guy, and I'm not arguing that LeBron's a better player than Jordan. I'm not doing that. I'm just pointing out some facts here. So in the documentary, Jordan loses, what, 3 out of 4 years to the Pistons in the postseason? And then finally he gets over the hump. But before he gets in over the hump, remember what they pointed out in the documentary? Yeah, well, before that season, Michael Jordan got into the weight room. And he made sure that everybody on the team was in the weight room. Like, congratulations. Working out, isn't that kind of something that you should be doing? But nonetheless, they were saying that Jordan needed to put on weight because he was playing at like 6'6", 195 pounds. Now, eventually, he bulked up to about 215 pounds so he could be heavier and he could sustain some of the beating that the Pistons put on him, so to speak. So you realize LeBron's 6'9", 250. So you're telling me that LeBron would have been scared of the physicality of the bad boy Pistons? That's what would have prevented LeBron from winning in the 1980s. Dennis Rodman was 6'7", 210. So LeBron would have been scared going to the lane and Dennis Rodman being there. And by the way, Dennis Rodman had an idiotic statement this week, too. He said, oh, LeBron, all he is his power. It would have been easy to defend him. Yeah, okay. Yeah, the worm would have been able to shut down LeBron James. Give me a break. Rick Mahorn, 6'10", 260. So basically the same size as LeBron James. That's the big man. That's the enforcer for the Pistons. Bill Laimbeer played at 6'11", 245. So LeBron's actually bigger than him in terms of his weight. John Sally, another one of those enforcers for the Detroit Pistons, 6'11", 230. So this, to me, is just irresponsible for former NBA players to basically, they defend their era. That's what it's about. Oh, LeBron could have never played in our day. Well, I do know this. If LeBron played in the 1990s, in the late 80s, he would have been by far the best athlete in the sport, right? So there's that. there's the element of athleticism where LeBron is just on another level than anybody else named Jordan. Okay, so maybe the second best athlete, I should say, in the NBA at that time behind Jordan. But nobody else is close to LeBron and Jordan in terms of just pure athleticism. So we're supposed to believe that the modern day athlete, LeBron James, we couldn't put him in the 1990s and he couldn't have a high level of success. That is just ridiculous to me. Oh, he didn't want any part of the bad boy Pistons, really? Okay, well, I did see him come back against the Golden State Warriors, who had won 73 games. We were having legitimate conversations. If that Warriors team won the championship, were they better than Michael Jordan's team that won 72 games and won an NBA championship? We were having discussions about that. LeBron came back from 3-1 against those guys, but LeBron couldn't beat the bad boy Pistons with John Sally and Rick Mahorn and Bill Laimbeer in the lane. He would have been scared of those guys. That is ridiculous to me. That's just irresponsible. LeBron James couldn't beat the bad boy Pistons. You have got to be joking. And this is somebody that's not a LeBron fan. I'm not a big fan of LeBron. And by the way, I'm not arguing that Michael Jordan wasn't better than him, because he was. Michael Jordan, when I compare LeBron to Michael Jordan, I look at LeBron, he never played on the team of his decade, right? So this past decade, the team of the decade has been the Warriors. The decade before that, it was the San Antonio Spurs. LeBron's never played on the team of the decade, and Michael Jordan won 6 championships in a single decade. So I'm not even arguing that LeBron is a better player than Jordan. I would argue for Jordan every day of the week. But when we start to have these arguments about LeBron James and Charles Barkley says he didn't want any part of the bad boy Pistons, you got to be kidding me. That's a joke. Who was going to cover LeBron James from the bad boy Pistons? It wasn't like Jordan wasn't having success against those guys. He's averaging like north of 30 points per game. It's just he didn't have a lot of help. You don't think LeBron James wouldn't have averaged 30 points a game with Dennis Rodman and John Sally and Bill Laimbeer playing against? Come on. That's a joke. That's irresponsible. Okay. And another thing I would mention is this. Something I'm learning from this documentary that has been proven wrong, rather, about the 90s era basketball, this myth, right? So in the late 80s, I should say, there was this myth that, hey, back in those days, everybody hated each other. Nobody liked each other playing in the 90s, right? Everybody hated each other. They wanted to beat each other so badly. Okay, well, okay, let me make this abundantly clear. Michael Jordan, before a playoff game, played golf with Danny Ainge, who was playing on the Boston Celtics. And now the older generation players criticize current players because they're friends and there's this AAU attitude, so to speak, this AAU world that everybody lives in. Well, the greatest player in the sport, Michael Jordan, was playing golf with Danny Ainge, who was a member of arguably the greatest team of all time, the 1986 Celtics. He was playing golf against that guy. And there weren't friends in the NBA until the AAU era. It's just ridiculous to me. They played golf the day that they were getting ready for a postseason game. And, oh, it didn't affect Jordan. He went out and scored 63 that day. It wasn't a big deal whatsoever. So I don't understand why we had this image, or the 90s players, the ex-90s players, the Charles Barkleys of the world, they want to portray this thing like there was this era of basketball where guys just hated each other. Not the case. Michael Jordan's playing golf with Danny Ainge the day of a game. And he told him to tell Dennis Johnson that he had something for him that night. Okay. Another thing that we saw criticized by former players, and Charles Barkley in particular, is this idea of teaming up where they felt as if, oh, that would never happen in our era. Okay. Well, maybe Larry Bird wouldn't play with Magic Johnson in the mid-1980s when they had that heated rivalry. And maybe Magic Johnson wouldn't want to come play with Larry Bird, right? Okay, that's fine, because those guys didn't like each other. Now, eventually they became friends, and obviously they're friends now, but they started hating each other, right? Because they wanted what the other guy had. They wanted to be considered the best in the sport. They wanted to beat each other, right? I get all that. But this idea that players never teamed up is absolutely ridiculous to me. For example, you look at the 1990s, Clyde Drexler forces the Portland Trailblazers, who had gone to the finals, what, 3 years prior when they lost to Michael Jordan and the Bulls. Clyde Drexler forces his way out of Portland to go to Houston, where he played his college basketball, and team up with his former college teammate, Hakeem Olajuwon, and that Rockets team was just coming off a championship. So Clyde Drexler, a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history, forced his way out of Portland to join the Houston Rockets. So that happened in the 1990s. Oh, how about Charles Barkley himself? When we're talking about player movement, etc., at the end of his career, okay, at the end of his career, you know what he did? You know what Charles Barkley did? He forced his way out of Phoenix so he could join the Rockets, who at that time had Clyde Drexler and at that time had Hakeem Olajuwon. Now, when Barkley got to the Rockets, he was not good anymore, and he had gotten completely out of shape. And actually, he went to the coaching staff and said, hey, you got to bring me off the bench now. You got to bring me off the bench now because I can't do it anymore, right? I mean, he had the wherewithal and he had the self-awareness, I should say, to realize he wasn't good anymore. Okay, but the point being that you had guys in the 90s switching teams to pair up with guys, not to the level it's at now, but this is how things go. In the 1990s, we had teams in the NFL that were throwing the ball. In the early 2000s, we had that as well. We had nothing to what we have today. So things evolve. That's how the NBA has evolved. Players have taken control of things. So by the fact that these guys are signing shorter contracts, right? LeBron's been famous. Now, his most recent contract was a four-year deal. He's been famous for signing the one-plus-ones, as has Kevin Durant until his last deal after the Achilles injury. So he puts the pressure on the organization, and he can control the narrative where they want to play. So it's just the next start or the next part of the evolution, if you will. In the 1990s, you didn't have free agency like you do today. It wasn't as crazy, and guys were signing huge long-term deals. In the old CBAs, you could sign like 8-year contracts. I mean, in the 80s, Magic Johnson signed a 25-year contract, right? You don't have that anymore. The most a guy can sign is a 5-year contract. So now guys are learning, okay, I can control my destination. I can put more pressure on the organization. It's just smart from a business perspective to sign, if you're an elite player, to sign some of those shorter term deals so you control the outcome and you control where you're going to be. But it's just a step up from where they were in the 90s. It's a step up from where Clyde Drexler was when Clyde Drexler in the 1990s wanted out of Portland. It's just a step up from that. It's different than a trade demand. It's the next evolution. It's the next step to the player empowerment era, if you will. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Matt. He's in Salem. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Brian, I love the show. I'm not a huge basketball guy, but I do like this Jordan documentary. And I think I'm surprised by, you know, if Jordan had Final Cut, it kind of makes it look like Scottie Pippen was, you know, pretty crucial to this guy's success. You know, they show the season where they're like 4-4 out of the gate without Scottie, and things don't get really right until he's back. So that was surprised to see Jordan let that be shown that way. Scottie, obviously, with a really bad contract, but really good player. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. And then one more take before you let me go here. Cam Newton to the Patriots as a tight end. What are your thoughts there?
I appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be the tight end. Like, if he does come here, he's going to be a quarterback. But I don't see it happening for a multitude of reasons. And I kind of laid them out earlier, but mainly because of the fact that I believe that if you look at Cam Newton, the fact that the Panthers decided to move on from the player and decided to go with Teddy Bridgewater, a guy that has a noodle for an arm, a guy that averaged 153 passing yards per game. I get he went 5-0 with the Saints, but it was because of the defense. The fact that the Panthers thought that was a better option at quarterback tells you what they think of Cam Newton's health going forward, a guy with a Lisfranc foot injury and a shoulder injury the season prior to that. So for those reasons, I don't see Cam Newton becoming a member of the Patriots. Now, if they did go after Cam Newton, different from a guy like Dalton, who, of course, is going to the Cowboys, because if you're signing Cam Newton, you're saying, okay, this guy enhances our chances to actually make a run and be legitimate contenders again, right? But when you look at it on the other side of things and you look at the fact that he's been dealing with all these injuries, it just makes me think that Belichick's not going to go after the guy because the guy's had no market whatsoever. No market whatsoever, a guy that was the former MVP of the NFL. Okay, now to the Scottie Pippen thing. I did not realize all that stuff about Scottie Pippen. I knew that he had a contract issue with the Bulls. I did not realize that until the documentary, and I'm sure some of the older listeners remember this, I didn't realize that he put off his surgery. And Michael Jordan still to this day says Scottie Pippen is wrong for doing that. Now, Pippen felt like he was not getting treated the way he should from the organization because Pippen had signed a contract earlier, but the owner of the team, Jerry Krause, said don't sign this, but it was tough for Pippen because he was taking care of a lot of members of his family. Two members of his family, his father and his brother, were both in wheelchairs, so he wanted to make sure that he'd get the money, take care of his family, etc., right? But Scottie Pippen was so upset about his contract that he said, I'm going to enjoy my summer and not get my surgery. So then he comes into the season. He's not ready to go. He gets his surgery right before the season, and Jordan's going to go out there with just him and Dennis Rodman. And Jordan's still pissed about it to this day. Now, Steve Kerr said that the rest of the team wasn't mad about him, but Jordan, you could tell in that documentary, was still irritated about that situation. And one more thing about the documentary. It's nowhere near the Patriot situation. I know Mark James has said this multiple times, like comparing Jerry Krause wanted to move on from Michael Jordan. And it wasn't just Jerry Krause. It was Reinsdorf as well, the owner of the team. They wanted to move on from Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson. It's not the same thing with Brady and Belichick. Brady's been here for 20 years. You've got six championships out of him. You weren't going to get another one with Tom Brady. You've gotten everything you possibly could have gotten out of Tom Brady. You couldn't have got anything more out of Tom Brady here as a member of the New England Patriots. You weren't going to get any more Super Bowls with Tom Brady. So you got everything out of it. With Jordan and with Phil Jackson, it feels like there's more meat on the bone. And that's not the case with the Patriots whatsoever. It doesn't feel like there's more meat on the bone. Jordan, you could see him winning another championship. Think about this. Jordan's final season with the Bulls. He's MVP of the league. He's finals MVP. And he's a scoring champ. All three of those things. Brady had one of his worst statistical seasons, and the quarterback is 43, and he just lost to the Tennessee Titans. Two totally different situations. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. I do want to touch on one thing Kendrick Perkins said this week that I could not be more tired of. I'll get into that next right here on WEI.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You're locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, Brian Barrett with you until 4 o'clock. The number 617-779-7937. I just had an issue with Charles Barkley this week, saying LeBron would want no part of the bad boy Pistons. Yeah, you're right. 6'9", 250 pounds. One of the best athletes we've ever seen walk the face of the planet. Rick Mahorn, Bill Laimbeer, and John Sally, and Dennis Rodman. That would have been what would be preventing LeBron James from winning championships. Give me a break. Let's get to Artie. He's in Reading. What's up, Artie?
Yes, hi. I've got some information for you. I was a ball boy for the 1956-57 Celtics, only for 1 year. Mm-hmm. I lived in the North End so I could walk to work and walk home. Following year, my family moved to Brookline. My mother married a well-to-do man, and there was no way after the night games that I could get there. But if you want to say that Michael Jordan was the greatest guard of all time, I'll give you that. That Magic Johnson was his one of the two greatest guards of all time. LeBron James, one of the two greatest forwards of all time. I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the greatest basketball player of all time, the greatest center of all time, it would have to be Will Chamberlain, because he did two things that no one else had ever done in basketball history. He tied with Michael Jordan for most points in a season, but he did it in the two-point era. Michael Jordan did it in the three-point era. He also tied with Bill Russell for most rebounds in a game per game for his whole career at 23.
Yeah.
So but the greatest basketball player of all time was Bill Russell. I was there. I saw it. He would get rebounds, and sometimes before he even touched the ground, he would pass it to Heinsohn. Heinsohn to Cousy, Cousy to Sharman. There goes your fast break in 5 or 6 seconds. Nobody played. Nobody had a result of. I'm nervous. Let me just say this. I'll slow down. Mm-hmm. No one made his team play better than Bill Russell. A lot of people don't know that Bill Russell won 3 championships in 1 year. He won a collegiate championship, University of San Francisco, along with Casey Jones. Mm-hmm. Back-to-back championships in their junior and senior year. Bill Russell averaged 20 points a game and 20 rebounds in college in 40 minutes. So he could have scored if he wanted to. But Auerbach knew. He had the shooters. He had Cousy. He had Sharman. He had Easy. He had McCauley. He knew that he could win if he could just get good defense. So that's when he made probably the greatest trade in sports history when it involved 3 Hall of Famers to get Bill Russell.
Yeah.
Bill Russell, Easy Ed McCauley, and I never can remember the name of the other guy who was supposed to come to the Celtics as a rookie.
Yeah.
Red Auerbach had drafted him, but he had to go away in the service for 2 years with ROTC. So he would have come on the team as a rookie. That 1956-57 team had 2 players who were on the starting team, and Casey Jones, never forget Casey Jones, he was the 6th man. Do you know that Casey Jones has more championships than any player in basketball history? 8 as a player, 2 as head coach for the Celtics, and people are going to just love this. 2 as an assistant coach for the Los Angeles Lakers when...
Yeah, hey, Artie, I appreciate the call. Sorry we're short on time. But, yeah, it's tough to compare eras when you're bringing up Bill Russell, comparing him against Michael Jordan, et cetera. It's tough to do that, comparing him against Kareem. It's tough to do it in terms of across eras. The overwhelming point I was just trying to make with the LeBron-Michael Jordan thing, the fact that Charles Barkley's bringing up the 80s Pistons and that team would have been the reason LeBron wasn't winning championships and he wouldn't want any part of those guys, I just think that's ridiculous. An athlete in any generation that's elite in his generation – put him in a different time, LeBron's still going to be a great player no matter when he would have played. One more thing I want to get to real quick. Kendrick Perkins this week was on a podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area, and he was talking about the Ray Allen KG beef, and he said what happened was this. Ray during that time wasn't happy because Doc made him the 6th man. He made him come off the bench, and he wasn't happy about that. And during that time, Boston had taken a 3-2 lead over Miami. They go to Game 7, they lose. But guys felt like Ray wasn't all the way in, and guys say, Ray talking to Braun and some of the Heat players after the game and the way they was rocking at that time. If you wasn't the Celtics, our locker room wasn't open for the people to walk in. None of that. So he's talking about Ray going to the Miami Heat and how the Celtics players at that point in time felt betrayed. Well, this is what I'd bring up with this. The Celtics, this 08 group, first of all, it feels like they think they won like 8 championships. Okay, you guys won 1 championship. And secondarily, Ray Allen gets way more of the blame for this than he should. Ray Allen told Doc Rivers, Rondo's not passing me the ball. And Doc said, yeah, we know. They knew it was happening and they still went along with it. They didn't say anything to Rondo. And secondarily, he was going to come off the bench again like he was that year. And he goes to the Heat with LeBron and Dwayne Wade, who had just won the championship, say, hey, Ray, we really need you, man. We need you. If you sit out there in the corner, you're going to get so many open threes. And the Celtics are telling them, well, we got Rondo, so he's going to control the ball. He's not going to pass you. What would you do if you were Ray Allen? Okay, the Celtics are bringing you off the bench. You got a point guard that doesn't want to pass you the basketball. Or you could go to the Miami Heat, the reigning defending NBA champions, where legitimately the best player in the world, LeBron James, who had won back-to-back championships, is begging you, Ray, we need you. You're going to make us so much better. You're going to make me and Dwayne Wade better because you're going to get all these open shots. You're going to space the floor. So what choice would you make if you're Ray Allen? Go back to the place where the coach knows the point guard isn't passing to you, and the point guard's not going to pass you, and you're going to come off the bench, even though at that point you're one of the greatest shooters in NBA history, or go to Miami where the best player in the world, the finals MVP back-to-back years or in a year coming off the OKC win, and a 2-time MVP at that point or a 3-time MVP at that point is saying, hey, I need you, Ray. What choice would you make? Seems pretty damn easy to me. All right, thanks to Bridget for producing. Have a great afternoon, everybody. Be safe and be well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.